A high school kid with cerebral palsy started making hot sauce in his grandma's kitchen and turned it into a company during millions of dollars in sales. Today, we're talking to the founder of the Stacked Hot Sauce Company, Drew Davis. I'm sorry. Today, we're talking to the founder of the Stacked Hot Sauce Company, Drew Davis, on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? My name is Evan Rosenblum, along with Isaac Shapiro and Mike Gesser. Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. And this is a special episode because we've got somebody that is, honestly, this dude is, I love this guy today. His name is Drew Davis, and he is the creator of The Crippling Company. And it's not just that he's an entrepreneur. I wrote down a bunch of words to describe him because I was thinking about the way to introduce this guy. He's a pioneer. He's an entrepreneur. He's a rebel. He's like, I want to say like a reluctant spokesperson for like the CP community, but I feel like you went from like reluctant spokesperson to now you've owned it. And now you're just like out there, but you're like, you've also become a voice for the voiceless, because in the CP community, like my daughter, for example, is nonverbal, but I feel like you do a hell of a job representing people like her too. So without further ado, I want to bring in Drew Davis. Drew Davis to the show, everybody. What's going on?
Drew.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man, it's an absolute honor to have you on. Not only do we want to talk about the business that you've created, a multi-million dollar empire with Crippling Hot Sauce and the origin story about how you launched that with your buddy, which, by the way, is kind of like a spite sauce in a way. It was like your teacher told you, I don't think you can do it. And you were like, watch this. And then you went and just this rocket ship of a company that took off, and we'll get into that. But also like, what you've been doing as a creator online, the content that you make, the way that it resonates, it's just amazing. And the reason that I love it, and I kind of want to talk about this right at the front, because when you talk about people who are usually representative and advocates for disability, we were talking about this before the show. We talk about, your polished, perfect people when you talk about advocates. And when you talk about Drew Davis, you're not like the polished, perfect spokesperson. And that's what I love about you, that like you tell it how it is. You're raw, you're unfiltered, you're real. You talk, excuse my French, everybody. But like, that's what I think makes you so relatable, so likable. And so it's like.
And he's a comedian too. Don't forget that. So
yeah.
So this guy brings it. He's multifaceted.
Yeah, but like the points that you make, the really important points that you make on social media, they land because it's not the usual sunshine and rainbow messaging that people see across all of the disability community's social media pages. It's like you do it in a really creative and impactful way that like my stupid friends will consume organically, and it's meaningful. And I think that it's so different, unique, and smart. And I just, first off, before we get into everything else, I just want to say thank you for that, man. And I want to know like how you decided to go at it this way. And I just want to hear more about like your journey into the social influencer path.
Yeah, for sure. So like I said, I grew up in a small town, like 45 miles south of St. Louis. And my whole life, like I was the only person that looked like me. I was the first disabled person to be in general ed classes in my school district. So I really had to pave the way. And my entire, school career, people thought they had to baby me, treat me different just because this contraption that I used to get around called a wheelchair. And because of the way I grew up, my mom's a probation and parole officer. My dad's a truck driver. They always just treated me like I was normal. So that's kind of how I got into the the different way of abnegating and making fun of myself. And I really figured out that a lot of people in the disabled community had this. The time growing up, I played an adaptive sport called power soccer, and that's where I found a lot of my disabled, like, friends. And I found out, wait, it's not just me that has this sense of humor. It's a lot of people in the community. And that's not the kind of thing that most people think when they think of the disabled community. They think of a community that has to be coddled and given stuff. And, you know, you have to not joke around about them because their situation's terrible. And so when I flipped a switch when I was 14, I weighed 300 pounds. And my doctors at the time were like, you're going to be bedridden by age 18 if you don't make a change. And I've hardly ever seen somebody that's sedentary lose over 100 pounds like you have to. And that day I looked at him, I'm like, watch me, I'm going to do it. Over the lockdown in 2020, ended up dialing in my diet and losing over 100 pounds. And that's when I knew the mind is truly limitless. Like, there's nothing you can't do, disabled or not. It's just whatever you put your mind to, if you want it, you could have it. So the year after that, that's kind of how I got into the liking hot sauce. The year after that, I had the school project. I presented what was called crippling hot sauce, and my whole objective was to rewrite people's perspective and show that, you know, we are just like you, normal everyday humans, and put it out to the world. And that's when it just clicked like that. I realized it was like a message and advocacy people could get behind. It's easy to digest. It's not, and there's nothing wrong with people that think this way, but it's not like me saying, oh, I'm differently abled, not disabled.
Right.
I'm just right in your face. Like, no, I'm just like you, and I make fun of myself and stuff like that. So now, recently, to kind of branch off more into the creator side, we rebranded the Stack to have more of a product that stands on its own on, like, the shelf that you would find and buy, and not as much gimmicky. That way we could split the creator side and the product side, because the creator side is really, really what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And getting the message out and saying my jokes. I started, I guess you would call it, my sit-down comedy career.
Yeah.
And you gotta love Grandma's Landline.
Yeah,
I love it. I love
it.
In Missouri, that's what you get in a small town, right?
That's right. Well, no, because, you know, I think you got a huge point, because I feel like when, you know, now more than ever, when you decide to buy a product, you're not just buying, like, you're not looking at the shelf and being like, oh, that label is better than that label. You're looking beyond the label, what goes into the product. And when you can look into the creator's story, when you know, like, your story, for example, and I see you on social media, I'm like, hey, I like this dude. I like his story. I like what I'm seeing on social media, and I want to support him and his company. That's more compelling than just having, like, a pretty label in a store and, like, a slick advertisement on television or on the radio. And that's worth more of an investment of your time, energy, resources, and money than, like, going to a brand and saying, like, how do I tell people that it tastes good? I'd rather hear your story. And I think the way you're going about it is brilliant and genius, and honestly, the way of the future.
I think the more, as brands exist, like, the way to go viral is just, people are done with, like, the corporate buzzwords and stuff like that. They just want real, authentic, funny advertisements, like something you send to your buddies and joke around about. Like, I was like, when I look at, like, the who's crushing it into the social environment, I look at something like a Liquid Death or a Wendy's. It was just roasting people. And I think they posted something the other day I forget who it was during NFL free agency. It was some player that got like released, and they said, "We're in need of a taste tester. If you need a job."
Yep. You know.
So,
you know.
So it's like that sort of.
It was Geno. It was Geno Smith. Really,
yeah. It was Geno. I just like the fact that. The fact that a corporate brand would even touch that shows like the path that everybody's tired of, like the advertisements. It's been done for so many years. And the new way is definitely to have, you know, a funny face that's approachable and people can relate to.
And authentic. Authentic is the key, I think.
Like I never look when I'm on social media. The reason we do so well is like, I'm truly just talking to like my buddies is what it was like this is like videos I'm making is stuff I would send in the group chat.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you've done a really good job. I mean, it's definitely been entertaining and I can't wait to bring in Josh on our next episode and talking more about the work you guys are doing. But I think what's important that I think you're doing is creating awareness. And as Evan, even though I've known him since college, he's taught me a lot about cerebral palsy. Like I'm an expert, I would say, in vision loss. And one of the things that, you know, I think you're doing a great thing that Evan's taught is even people parking and handicap. But so I think the handicap spot, I just love that story and what you guys have been able to do and bring awareness, bring some comedy.
Can I jump into this?
I'm setting you up, Evan. That's what I'm saying. I thought because I love the content.
Great setup.
So okay. We love it because go ahead.
Drew, I've been dying to ask you about this because I love the video that you made on social media where you guys dressed up as cops and you confronted able-bodied people who park in handicapped spots. Because I have a daughter, just the background. My daughter is 10 years old. She has severe cerebral palsy. She's nonverbal. She's in a chair. And we have a van and we need the handicap spots, right? It's not just that we want to park closer to the places we need to go. It's a safety issue with us because it's a backloading van and we need the space to get her safely out of the car. And when I see people that are able-bodied that are parking in handicap spots that don't need it, the way I approach this, and it's happened to me a couple times, is I call people out. And sometimes other people in the community will say like, well, you don't know what's going on with them. But I say, yeah, but I have eyes that work. And if I see that they're walking around fine and they don't need the spot, I feel the way that you dissuade them from doing in the future is you call them out on it. You confront them and you make them really like feel uncomfortable for taking a spot away from somebody who clearly needs it, like my daughter. And when I saw the video that you made, I loved it. And I'm curious your opinion on this. Like, what was I'm curious, what was the feedback that you got after that video? And is this something that you do in your normal life or is it something that you just do on social media?
No, I've done it before, obviously. Like, when I do it, it's more like a lighthearted jab. Like, I think I gave our mile is called Just for the Parking. And one time I gave a bottle of Just for the Parking to this dude that and the parking as well, like lighthearted jobs like that for social media. Yeah, it was, that's obviously more extreme than I normally do it, but everybody loved it. The people that did not were the people that were getting confronted.
Right.
Yeah. Like I respected it because even then, like I was like doing it to these people and they were like threatening to beat me up. I was like, oh yeah, you're a real tough one.
Yeah.
Like just pushing the envelope and they're like, I could beat you up. I'm like, I'm sure you could. That's not really that's not Jake Paul picks tougher fights.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So what's your message to like other people who, what would your message be to like somebody like me? Do you think that I should continue to confront people who do that or should I chill out?
Whatever feels compelling to you is what you should do. I think that, like, there's no right or wrong. I think I choose to park in the back because I have a side loader.
Yeah.
And like I have a power wheelchair. So like that doesn't, like, I would rather save the handicap parking spots to somebody with like a rear loader that needs it or doesn't have a power wheelchair, because all I have to do is move my hand forward.
Sure.
affect me much, but I know people that it does.
Yeah.
Evan, never lose your advocacy, whether it's raging or it's a little bit. Your advocacy is your advocacy, and I think it works well.
Yeah.
And park wherever you want.
Yeah. My dad does the same thing.
Yeah. I like your dad. I like you. Be like me and your dad hang out and get into trouble. I have another question for you. With my daughter in particular, I've noticed, she likes spicier foods. And I've noticed that a lot of people in the CP community, taste can sometimes be affected. So things that are spicier, people have cerebral palsy, spicier, more flavorful foods resonate stronger. Is this one of the reasons that you kind of felt like hot sauce was kind of your calling? Was it something that
how'd you choose hot sauce?
It was because when I was during my weight loss journey, I was trying to figure out a way to flavor my food for low calories, and hot sauce is the lowest calorie condiment on the market. I'm like, I don't just want to eat plain chicken all the time.
Yeah.
And when I was like looking at, like, I live in a small town, so when I was like looking at the shelf, it was all just like cayenne and more cayenne.
Yeah.
I want like bacon flavored or something. So that's kind of how I came up with the school project, and then the rest is how I got into hot sauce, and then that led into the school project, and then the rest is history.
So necessity fuels innovation.
We don't we don't have the history. So I know a little bit more because I've heard your story. You guys had $3,000. So take us a little bit more, because you started, you got the hot sauce, the project. So you're doing it in whose house? So tell us a little bit more of how you got to this today, because you're how many, couple years, couple months? Tell us a little bit more about that phase you're in right now and getting to where you're at today.
So after the school project, went home and started researching and coming up with recipes, and then came up with the original three. And I launched it with the $3,000 I saved up for my birthdays and Christmases throughout my life, because I always knew I was going to need it for something. And I was going to bet on myself, because I always knew what I was going to be capable of doing more than, your average HR manager that's just looking at my output because I can't type fast enough. So I was saving it up, and while all my friends were buying Fortnite skins and making fun of me for not having them, I was just saving my money for a rainy day. That rainy day came along. I bought my first bottle order. It was like 1,000 bottles and the ingredients. And we sold it to family and friends. And that's when I really got the business buzz. And then I got my first like TV spot. Is I guess the music teacher had a feud with the same teacher that gave me the 82. So he started reaching out to people just because he wanted to support me out of spite as well. And then I, since we're in a small town, I got on all the local news and just took off from there, spiraled. And now 4 years later, we're multi seven-figure brand and supporting people with disabilities with every bottle sold.
That's incredible. Yeah,
when I found out about your brand, it was before it was stacked. It was Crippling Hot Sauce, and the way that I saw it was like a something on Instagram. It was a news story. It was before your socials started to get bigger, and you started putting more time into that. And so, like, I remember, like, even when I bought the hot sauce the first time, I think it, did you like raise money like a Kickstarter or crowdfund or something like that? Or, because I remember when I bought it, it was very early in your journey.
We did a little bit like a family and friends like round, where just like, it was basically like a crowdfund, yes, for a low minimum, and people that just wanted to support my mission was able to do so. And that's how I was able to get into like like manufacturing, getting the money for like the first big order. Because like, as you know, there's MMQs and a 16-year-old at the time that has no, you know, job. Like, obviously it's really hard to just come up with, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $25,000. So thankfully I have a really supportive family. And even though like I grew up in a middle-class family that didn't have a ton, everybody was kind of chipped in what they could, and as they got me we got that first bottle order, and whether it be financially what they can or with labor, they've helped me every step of the way, and I couldn't do it without them. And I think that is the important part of my story is, yes, I have been blessed and have done all this, but I couldn't do it without an incredible support system.
100%.
And that's okay to admit that I needed help.
We did. When Isaac and I started our business, we 100% needed help. We had our family came to us and helped us, and even some friends too. And I couldn't imagine where we'd be without them.
Yeah. Can I bring up something I think is really important in what I am drawn to Drew and what he's doing outside of the mission? Is he has a very similar setup, Mike, is what we've done. So he has the for-profit setup, which we're calling Stacked. I know I still love the Crippling Hot Sauce. Yeah. So I get why you guys changed it. So you got Stacked as the for-profit business. And then you have Limitless Foundation, which Drew, I'd love for you to talk about. So you also have this nonprofit, which I want you to explain. And you also, what you brought up, Evan, is the content creator. So we have Inspire Media, we're creating content. So this is what I feel when I heard this, when they were talking about it, I'm like, wow, this is what we're doing. This is the future of how social enterprise will work and how social entrepreneurs will work, because they're not going to be defined by this one company. You have the nonprofit component, and then you have the creator component. So I'm glad you set up the creator component. But Drew, talk to us a little bit about the Limitless Foundation. I hope I said it properly, because I think that's the model as we get in and talk with Josh. Like, I think this is the future of what you're going to see social enterprises looking and what they're doing, especially the work you're doing at your foundation. So Drew, talk to us more about how you got into creating your foundation.
Yeah, so when I first started, you know, this journey with the hot sauce, I originally started by donating to cerebral palsy research. And as I've kind of gotten more into advocacy, I was like, and reading the comments and taking feedback, I was like, I want like a more like impact that you can see. And like, through the creator side, we'd be getting hundreds of DMs a month. And I was like, man, like, I wish I had like an opportunity to chase after X, Y, or Z dream, but I don't have the money, I don't have the resources, whatever it may be. Or, oh, you're doing an Ironman, I've always wanted to do one of those. So I said, you know what, like, what if we just created our own foundation, and like the goal, like, we fund other people's dreams through that, instead of just giving it to some cerebral palsy research, which, like, you know, the stigma behind research and stuff like that. You never really...
You don't know where it
goes. No, so it's like, we started working on that, and then December 12th, we officially launched, and we just got back from a 40-state road trip where...
Like, holy.
We're working on raising $100,000 for the foundation and giving out our first grant live on national television to a disabled comedian on March 20th. Because I really think that is humor is the ultimate equalizer.
Yes.
What better way for the first ever grant for the ultimate equalizer to give a grant to somebody who's using his ultimate equalizer, which is comedy, to kind of level the playing field and show that, oh, he has this sense of humor, too. And we like, it's so cool. If you see his videos, somebody's holding up like read cards behind him. So the audience, it's easier for them to like follow him. And so I really feel like it's just, comedy is one of the most inclusive things you could do.
On that note, and we're going to wrap up soon because on the next episode, which is going to follow this one, we're going to have your partner, Josh Wagner, join us. But before we wrap up real quick, as we're talking about comedians, I remember a comedian, and this resonated with me before my daughter was born. Actually, when my daughter was born, I thought back to a comedian that I saw on Last Comic Standing named Josh Blue. It was a comedian with cerebral palsy that I remember seeing before my daughter was born, before cerebral palsy entered my world. I remember him telling stand-up comedy jokes. I remember he was the first like disabled comedian that I saw that made an impact on me. I'm curious, have you guys connected? If so, what kind of an impact does somebody like that have on your life and on your career?
We've definitely messaged back and forth a few times and given him some hot sauce. He loves it. And
awesome.
Obviously, I asked him for some pointers, stuff like that. But I really think like people like that inspire me, because while we still are early in the movement, I'm like, how courageous do you have to be like one of the first? Like, yeah. you are the first like big comedian like with cerebral palsy to be out there. And like, I find it funny, the most common critique, whether it be for somebody like Josh Blue or somebody like myself, is that we're a one-premise comedian because all we joke about is our disability. And I go, hey, there's a lot of material to joke about. I'm still not through it all yet.
That's right. He was a great, he is still a great comedian, but I will say, because I remember him, again, I watched him way before my daughter was born, but there was a joke that he made way back in the day about having a startle reflex. And then when my daughter was born, and as she got older and she has a startle reflex too, I remembered him saying that, and it kind of eased my mind about her having a startle reflex. And I never really connected it until I saw him doing stand-up after my daughter was born. I was like, oh, that's where I remember that from. And his set, his routine made me feel much more comfortable and it like at ease with it. And you're right. It was like the humor and him talking about it and me just consuming it organically at the time and having that knowledge and information just made me more comfortable with the whole situation. And so he like educated me through comedy before it even really came into my life. And so I really appreciated that. And it like, I didn't know that I appreciated that at the time, but I did. And that's why it's so important to have like a representation from all walks of life and like, you know, different. It's great what you're doing and what Josh Blue is doing, leading the way and pioneering it, is exactly right. It must've been so tough because there weren't a lot of people with disabilities doing stand-up comedy, especially under the national spotlight at the time. So shout out, that guy deserves flowers for this, man. So shout out to Josh Blue for being a pioneer in that space. All right, we got to wrap things up now. Thank you to Drew Davis. We're going to have more to come on the next episode of Driven by Purpose with his partner, Josh Wagner. So don't miss the next episode coming up next. All right. Goodbye.
Thanks, Drew.